All right, we continue our conversation with Eileen Rockefeller. Good morning, Eileen.
Good morning, Rhett.
Being a Rockefeller, becoming myself. What motivated you to write this book now, Eileen?
Well, originally I thought it was going to be a book about this favorite time of mine that I referred to earlier about our experiment in simple living when our sons were 8 and 10. But when I finished writing those stories after they went off to college, and I wrote those as a way of keeping them close when I missed them, I realized it was too soon to publish those stories because they were too close to it and I didn't want to embarrass them. So I just kept going deeper and went back to my own childhood. And that's when I realized that I was joining the universal quest each of us has when searching for who we are. We can't really find out who we are without knowing who we are in the context of our families. Our families tend to provide mirrors, but the mirrors are often inaccurate. So the question that we have to wend our way through is, which of these mirrors really reflects us and which are no longer useful? And I've found that the greatest wounds from our childhood are the ultimate impetus for our deepest passions that provide us with the opportunity for the purpose we're here on Earth to live into. So the rest of my stories about my life, I hope will provide inspiration for others to look at their lives and their relationships with sisters and brothers and parents and children. They're just foundational stories about what it's like to grow up, never mind grow up in this particular family. Of being a Rockefeller.
Well, it's got to be difficult. I mean, the adulation, the judgment, the envy, and other emotions that people, some people, of course, the moment they meet you, you know, I find this just being a regional known talk host. Some people embrace you, and others immediately, if you send your eggs back because you want them not as well done or whatever, they think, oh, you're a prima donna.
Well, my mother used to say to us, in being a Rockefeller, you will get double praise and double blame. And I thought that was a very accurate description of what it's like to be a Rockefeller or any famous name, because people make assumptions in the same way they make assumptions about people who are of a certain religion or a color of skin. People make assumptions about people with famous names. So, yes, part of it's a challenge or difficult, as you say, but, of course, there are many extraordinary opportunities that come with it. And I feel deeply blessed to have a family who's so dedicated to service and who's modeled the doing of good works in the world. And sometimes that feels overwhelming, and other times it's really inspiring.
Let me ask you, you used the word blessed. May I ask you what your spiritual or religious beliefs are?
Yes, and I have a whole chapter on that in my book. My husband is Jewish, and when we got together, the first thing he did was to read me one of the sacred texts called the Shema, and we had a wonderful discussion about the values of being a Jew and the value of being a Rockefeller and the similarities that we found in our upbringings of the importance of service, the value of family and close connections with family and community, and also how people would make assumptions about us based on our religion or our name. So I was raised as a Protestant. I don't know really, just sort of it was called Protestant. We went to the Union Church of Pocantico Hills that my grandfather built, and it didn't hold a great deal of meaning for me, and so before we had children, I converted to Judaism, or what I prefer to say is I expanded to Judaism. I still love going to church. I still love the hymns, but I love the rituals that we've created in our home and raising our sons as Jews.
Oh, so you have raised your son as Jews.
Mm-hmm. We have.
Okay. You say that in your book, Americans are the worst at raising healthy children. Expound on that, would you?
Yes, well, the reason that I say that is that we give a lot of lip service to the importance of children, but we don't put our money where our mouth is. I was just in Chicago yesterday, and I learned that there are 18,000 homeless children going to public schools in Chicago.
18,000.
18,000. And that the national average of teenaged attempted suicides is about 8%. In Chicago, it's, 26%. I mean, it's just so devastating. And the good news, though, about all of this, and I'm happy to say I'm part of what I feel is a solution, is that there's an organization I co-founded, the Collaborative for Academic, Social, and Emotional Learning. Its acronym is CASEL. And CASEL is helping to promote social and emotional learning skills. These are basic life skills of listening, learning how to listen, learning how to control your impulses, understanding yourself. There are a number of factors that are being taught now in schools as a regular part of education in pre-K through 12th grade throughout the country and throughout the world. Every single state in this country now has public schools that teach social and emotional learning, or SEL. Wherever there is a social and emotional learning program that's integrated into the curriculum, the children do 11% better academically. So we know that this is a very important missing piece in education, and sadly, it has begun as a missing piece in family, in the home life. So I'm happy that it's beginning to be taught again.
Yeah. Well, I think this is a very important book at a very important time. Being a Rockefeller, becoming myself, as crazy as it sounds, I know a lot of people out there were saying, well, you know, you as a Rockefeller are impervious to the vicissitudes of life because you're insulated by money. And you would say that's not true, right?
I would say that I probably am more sheltered than people who are living on the streets or people who are struggling to make ends meet.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't solve all of the problems in the world myself, but I've chosen my portion, and I hope to do that very well.
Good for you. Well, listen, I thoroughly enjoyed this encounter, and I look forward to reading your book and then having
Thank you, Rhett. I hope it's not a bad encounter.
Oh, no. It was very good. I apologize for not having read the book. I've been away at this conference, ironically, with some very very successful individuals. Like I said, Mr. Huizinga was there, and he sold Blockbuster for $8 billion and dealing with his son and the obligation.
Well, you should tell him about this book and encourage him to read it, because it might give him some ideas about working with his son.
Actually, he has promised to come up next year, and we're going to do something, I'm going to interview him in front of a live audience. Maybe I can convince you to do that after we meet this summer, to maybe come to Vero Beach. We're an hour north of Palm Beach. I don't know if you're familiar with Vero, but listen,
yeah.
don't hang
We're
up.
Wonderful.
Don't hang up, because I want to ask you something personal off the air. But the title of the book, ladies and gentlemen, is Being a Rockefeller, Becoming Myself, and I promise I will read it in its entirety and take copious notes and underline and highlight, and then we'll do a more in-depth interview in the future. Today's broadcast brought to you by Vero, US1 Nissan, and Route 60 Hyundai. Tommy and Amory Trans are real givers to the community, and they help the Homeless Family Center. They help Habitat for Humanity. So support those that support our community, the Taranza family that owns Vero, US1 Nissan, and Route 60 Hyundai. This is the mayor who loves you, baby.